Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Fitter and Faster Coaches Corner. As always, I'm your host, Mike Murray. Today, we have the legend himself, Kyle Sockwell. Welcome to Coaches Corner. Super excited to have you on. Your content is blowing up, and it has been so fun to watch. I've kind of been following since the jump. But how are you doing, and what are you most excited about right now in the swimming world besides trying to do a 50 fly with jeans on? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, so the 50 fly with jeans on was pretty good. So I coordinated that piece of content with David and the Fitter and Faster team. And we're working together on a contract, but at the same time, this was just kind of us wanting to do something fun. So I provided some value, they provided some value, and we really we had this idea to send people to trials. We wanted to give that experience. And then I was like, you know what? I've had this idea for a long time to do some kind of swim in jeans. Why don't we figure out how to combine it? So it worked. it was easily the biggest piece of content I've ever put out. And I mean, things have been going really well. Everything's growing. People are super excited about it, which I've had a hard time understanding. Because it really feels, it's kind of like swimming in the sense that you get in shape. And when you're in shape, going certain times just kind of feels like it's what you do, and you don't really feel like it's anything different. So like I was actually just hanging out with Carson Foster before this. He's a good example. Carson went like 410 and a 400 IM in practice the other day, suited up 410 long course 400 IM. For 99.99999% of the population, that is an incredible time, like mind blowing time. And for Carson, it's expected. So it's kind of like this weird thing where I create this piece of content and I watch it and I'm like, that's fun. Then I put it out and the reaction to it is just always well beyond what I anticipated. That piece of content that I got to do with them, the reaction to that beyond exceeded even my highest expectations. So it's been fun. There's a lot of really fun stuff going on. The journey has been really fun so far, but my number one response to people's DMs when they DM me and say, which is like my favorite thing ever. So if you're listening to this and you've thought about DMing me and telling me that you enjoy my content, that's my currency right now. That's my revenue, is you telling me that. So please do. My number one response to that is, kind of lost my train of thought, actually. Number one response to that DM is just like a, you know, this is really fun and it's going to get more fun. There it is. I got back to it. One of the cool things that you'll realize about my brain is it moves very quickly in the creative aspect. So I'll be nine thoughts ahead. Some people would call it ADHD. I'll call it just a creative superpower. but I think things are really fun right now. And then once more people want to get involved and I get more access to things, which is what's happening right now, the stuff that's written on this whiteboard over here, it could be pretty cool for the sport.
That's so great, man. And we need some voices in our sport that are going to be able to provide content in a platform that our athletes, our parents, our coaches are soaking up, right? So when exciting things are happening in the swim world, people are going to travel over to where you are and they're going to see, all right, what has Kyle got on this one? Or what funny thing is Kyle going to put out this week? There's another guy on Instagram right now who, he's from Long Island. His name is Nikki Cass, and he does all of this great, like, Long Island.
Yeah,
sports.
I know him. He does the impressions of like an over the top baseball coach, right? And he's always got a pillow in his shirt.
Exactly right. Yeah, and he does impressions of, like, you know, your pizza shop owner down on Long Island.
Yeah, with the towel.
Yeah, and it's awesome. So on point. And you know, the game has changed so much in how we eat up different news and content in the sport. So talk to us a little bit about your background in swimming. I mean, I think everybody knows you now. You're so visible, but not everybody knows your background in the sport. Everybody knows that even after not swimming for a long time, you can still jump up and give us a decent 50 freestyle against my man Herbie.
He gave me a more decent one, but
what an athlete still, you know.
So one's legit.
Yes, it is. So tell us a little bit about your background and history in the sport.
Yeah, so I've answered this question a few times, and every single time I end it, I'm like, that was too long-winded. So I'm going to try. This is my first attempt at really trying to pack it down into the highlights, which is funny because my job is to do that. And I do it really well for swimming. But then when I talk about my swimming journey, I could just talk about it for 5 hours, but we have more things to discuss. So it started off with my first race. I had to be motivated with a pack of Pokemon cards and
see if I can grab it.
I always say, and I know I'm a grown man now. I always say that this Pokemon card right here, which is a Charizard second edition, probably not in like perfect condition. I always say that this is the card that I pulled out of the pack of Pokemon cards that convinced me to swim my first race. But it took a pack of Pokemon cards. I was 5 years old. And I mean, from there, I just kind of like, I think, fell in love with it, even as a young kid. Obviously, I had some ups and downs in the sport. Summer League was like most people, you know, exactly what got me just addicted to it was the fun and the, you know, one lap of the pool or length, depending on who you are, what you want to call just going down to the other side. We called it 25. But from there, the ball kept rolling. Was really, really small. Really small kid. Now I'm like a little bit above average height. If you look at the U.S. population, if you look at the world population, I've got about 3 inches on the 5'7" that an average man is. A little bit hefty, probably pushing like 205. But back then I was like 3'7", 15 pounds.
Where was this, Kyle? Where'd you grow up?
This is in Austin, Texas.
Okay.
So I went to high school. I was super small. Played baseball, played a bunch of other sports. Was actually pretty good at baseball. But then just kept coming back to swimming. So I would always get selected for the all-star team and then have to bail because summer season was coming up and I wanted to swim at junior nationals instead. So it was, do I want to play on an all-star team or do I want to be at junior nationals? I kept picking junior nationals and I think it was a good idea. Throughout high school, swam pretty well and, you know, was at state, but wasn't necessarily like one of the guys that was going to be at a legit power five school. I was solid, probably 400 in the 4IM was the best swim that I had, which was, it's a good high school time. It is. But when you start talking, and this is, remember, this is a long time ago now. This was like 14 years ago now. Less than that. All right. 11. But still a while ago. We'll go with 14 just so it sounds like I was faster than I was. So 400 was kind of like my main selling point. I was 438 in the 500 free, got recruited to a good amount of schools and then committed to George Mason. And that was where my freshman year, I really swam well. I went down to 352 in the 400 IM, down to 150 in the 200 IM, went 202 in the 200 breaststroke. And I had some options. George Mason was great. I, full disclosure, just didn't like cold weather from Texas. So I ended up, as many people know me now, as an Arizona State swimmer. So swam at Arizona State, swam like really well, I think. Went down to 158 in the 200 breaststroke. I mean, just had a really good time and then got to swim with Bob Bowman out there. But really, the main thing that I take away now is I started my media career when I was out in Arizona. So I started on Vine, actually, making some what I call terrible content. Terrible, like just meme-y, like engagement-hungry content. And listen, I still go for the engagement. That's my KPI. Key performance indicator for me is engagement. You know, are people engaged? Do people like what I'm putting out? Now the content is just better. I feel good about it. Back then, I would put out a piece of content that was me. And I still think there is a place for this kind of content. That was just me, like, when I do the 200 fly, and then I'm like, passed out in my bed or something like that. And people would be like, yeah, I relate to that. Now, I think there are more layers evolving in my content. And I think there are still so many layers to unfold. But that's where it all started. So from there, I started working at Flow Swimming, helped kind of like relaunch Flow Swimming. The swimming space, the media space in swimming is really, really tough. Really, really tough. We don't have a pro league. If we did, my job would be so much easier. So quickly, I realized that manufacturing content in swimming was where the sport is at right now. Manufacturing that content and manufacturing that audience. So creating that audience to then give fuel to people to then grow a viewership base, sell sponsorships, do that sort of thing is kind of the path that I've started to fall into. I walked towards it and then I fell into the hole of that. So just a brief overview. Started swimming for a pack of Pokemon cards and now I'm doing a 50 flying jeans because I think people like it.
They do like it, man. And listen, what are we always talking about as coaches and administrators in our sport is how do we make this more palatable? How do we make this more fun? You know, especially when we look at the competition space for your 12 and under athletes, right? Like, there are not a lot of parents this day and age, and I'm a parent too, and I know all of my friends who have kids. We don't like sitting on bleachers for 4.5 hours to watch a minute and a half of swimming, right? So what are some things that we can do as from a 10,000 foot level view at the sport to make it better? And I think having people like you celebrate like the great aspects of the sport, the humorous aspects of the sport, right? Like every great swimmer has a little cynicism in them about what it is they're doing to help, you know, get through those tough times. But talk to us about what you studied at Arizona State and like how you got led into flow swimming. I was telling somebody yesterday that the best piece of swimming content that I ever saw from a training standpoint is when Garrett McCaffrey went to Texas for like 3 days and he filmed everything. Mm-hmm. And there was this set that Chris Kubik was doing with the distance group. It was a 300 followed by 850s three times through. And like dudes like McBroom were there getting after it. And like, I was watching these repeats and that set has become a staple of the way that we train. But talk about your background there and kind of how you got into this.
Yeah. So I studied sociology and I would call it studying a field that kept me eligible. I was not good with school. I wasn't, I never was. I had a business mind early. I was always, so I mean, when I was, preface, I'm colorblind. So this is kind of a funny piece of this story on the education side of things for me. I loved like the artistic side of things and creative side of things. Even when I was like 14, 15 years old, I was doing like writing graffiti and doing like lettering. And, you know, I kind of worked that into getting Adobe Illustrator and creating logos. And I don't know if you know, 99 Designs is like a crowdsourced, it's kind of like an offshoot of Fiverr. So Fiverr is like you can hire someone to create a logo. 99 Designs back in the day was you could hire a bunch of designers to compete for your money for the logo. And so I would create a logo, put it in there and try to win, and create a logo and put it in there and try to win. And then I entered like a Google competition where they allowed people to redesign their logo. I didn't win that one. Didn't actually end up winning any of the 99 Designs contest, but it was kind of like that addictive creativity mindset. I was so addicted to creating stuff at a very early age. And so in college, I really just wanted to keep doing the same thing. So I launched a company that failed and failed and failed and failed again, but had a little bit of success called Swim With Issues with a friend of mine, which was in the swimming merchandising space. We were 19, 20 years old. So we had no idea what we were doing, but we found some success as I started to kind of move up the ranks on Vine and on Twitter and got a little bit of attention and tried to use that to sell merchandise immediately. Cause that's the playbook, right? You get some engagement and then sell stuff. Luckily, I mean, now I think I'm selling stuff that is fun and still creates value. But yeah, so I studied sociology, but I really would say that I was studying media throughout school. And then my dad sent me an editorial job at Flow Swimming, which is really interesting because I know the exact same content you were talking about, the yep. Garrett McCaffrey stuff where they were going out there and they were just, I mean, getting after it. They were in the yep. trenches trying to create content and trying to create that interest in the sport, which is, you know, it was much more difficult back then. You couldn't just pull out your phone and shoot a video and upload it to YouTube or Instagram and have an algorithm push it out to the right audience. It was so much more difficult. So I'm blessed to have the amount of easy traction, I would say, to getting that, you know, repetitive engagement from an audience. And so from there, applied to that editorial job. I had no editorial background. I mean, it was weird that I even applied to it, but I was like, yeah, why not? Let's do it. Got a call back. They loved the stuff I was doing on Twitter and all of that. I think they wanted to buy my audience, which I was totally fine with. And they actually told me I should be in a different position, which was just a content marketing manager or something like that. I said, yeah, let's do it. They hired me before I had a degree. I wasn't swimming anymore because my shoulder was messed up and I was just kind of done with the sport. It's a different story. So no degree in hand, came back to Austin where Flow Sports was at, finished my degree while I was working full time and just started getting after it with Flow Swimming. It was a tough space. It was a tough journey. the rights situation in swimming. I think so. My team, Clark Burkle and Macklin Simpson, were awesome. We had a great trio out there doing, I think, really good work, but we were just, you're up against ESPN and NBC, you know. Yeah. If you can't get the rights from them, then you lose. And we're charging a premium and it's an expensive product. So, we were swimming amongst a bunch of other sports that were doing a really good job. So we did that. And then I ended up moving over and doing some marketing consulting on my own, because I'm a marketing guy to my core. And then now I'm here. Now we're both feet into the swimming world.
It's awesome, man. And I'll tell you, it's been so fun to watch the journey from the first couple posts when you're out on your own to where you are now. And, you know, some of the more popular posts that you've had recently were at NCAA's, the caps. Like, mm-hmm. Talk about how you came up with that idea. I know you said you have a creative brain. I also caught in there that you think DC weather is cold. Why don't you come out to Rochester, New York, pal? We'll show you cold. But yeah, talk about, you know, the creative side of the caps. That was so awesome. And like, the athletes loved it too. Like Kelly Pash had stuff up forever after that, you know, like that was really neat.
Yeah, it was, it was a fun thing. I forget what exactly launched it. I do think the Texas caps were like the first ones that, and I mean, I will forever give Kelly credit for the move that she pulled. That was a great PR. I mean, if you are a young swimmer, that is something that you should be watching and trying to adopt in any way possible. And I was trying to kind of lead into it, but I wanted her to take the lead on it. So I talked to the production team. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I was commentating Big 12s. The cap momentum was happening and it hadn't really launched yet, though. People were starting to like unveil their caps and make it a cool thing, but it hadn't really jumped. And then Texas had these foil 3D soft. I have it right here. Grab it. Where's it at? These 3D foil Aquaforce wave caps. And I saw them on the pool deck. They were super cool. And I told the production team, I was like, look, Kelly is going to be wearing this cap, because I had seen her wearing it. She's going to be wearing this. Give me a shot of Kelly's cap. And then I want to do a quick monologue before we get into the race. Gave me a shot of Kelly's cap. I was like, I think Texas has the best caps in the NCAA. And then I like joked about it with her in the interview. And then we were DMing back and forth about the idea of like doing what she did on the last day. And then she gave me her cap on air. And then I turned that into a piece of content. And it was just like this full story, right? So it's interesting to look at something as simple as, and I mean, that's going to be probably my favorite cap forever, because it was that story is attached to it. But we look at this small moment, right, where I was like, those caps are cool. And then Kelly was like, why don't I maximize my camera time here and give Kyle a cap on stream? And then the production team on site did a great job cutting from Kelly to cutting from me, now having the cap in the booth and telling that story. And yeah, I mean, it was just a cool moment that then kind of kicked off this thing where I think we kind of woke up and we were like, caps could be a really good marketing asset for swimming, right? It could be something that becomes our jersey, becomes our hat, you know, becomes our thing that we could eventually sell to the public and make money. I don't think it's going to be a program saver. I don't think you're going to make $100,000 a season off of caps, but I can tell you right now, if you sell those foil Longhorn caps to the Longhorn alumni, or the Arizona State caps, those Aquaforce caps to the Longhorn or to the ASU alumni, they will spend $100 for that cap. They will spend $100 if they know that the profit from that cap is going to the program, because that's a donation that is now paired with something that you can hold in your hands, ties you back to that team, and you can wear while you train. Not only does it get alumni back in the pool, it also helps them get kind of their toe in the water, pun intended, to then start to donate to the program. I think there are a lot of programs out there, and if there's any coaches that run programs out there, NCAA, Division I, II, III, whatever, there are a lot of alumni out there that are interested in donating and becoming a donor, a donating alumni for the first time, especially in the, I'd say like 22 to 35 range, right? You're starting to make your money, but also you want to try to figure out how to use that money to make more money. There are a lot of people in that age demographic that want to donate, but don't just want to do a flat donation yet. They want to donate with something in return, which is totally fine. I think we look at it as, you know, like, we don't need to give you something. You should just want to give us your money. Well, how about we look at it from the standpoint of, let's get kind of the gateway drug of donations to swimming with a really cool swim cap out there, right? This is a $100 swim cap. That's fine. I know I'm being overcharged and I'm okay with it. So I really looked at swim caps as our biggest marketing asset. When I was running that media or that merchandising company, Swim With Issues, caps were my number one focus. We were doing caps that looked like pizza, that looked like mac and cheese, and we were shipping them out in pizza boxes and macaroni and cheese boxes because it was just kind of that cool thing that you can turn into something that makes the sport more fun, which is the entire thing with that storytelling. The bow on the present of the cap push in swimming is that they're cheap. They're typically cheap. Now they're starting to get more expensive with the nice caps. You can have a ton of creative fun with them, and people absolutely love them. It's a really cheap way to put out a piece of content and try to differentiate and just continually make something cooler and cooler for the sport and just add a little bit more fun to it.
Well, Kyle, everybody loved that piece of content from Big 12s and then on to NCAAs. And then everybody sees you getting caps from every college program in the country. I mean, that's really neat. Let's see. And now you can do some more giveaway content with it, but let's see how many clubs and teams show up at trials with some of those foil caps.
There's a lot that are, I mean, so I talked to that team that does the foil caps, and they've also helped me with my inventory as a result of getting them business. And, you know, Arena is super excited about all of this stuff as well. So it's a fun kind of like tornado of help, and a lot of people wanting to get involved. And that's, so I've talked to some people that are in my network, luckily, that have been really successful in the media space. And there are a handful, maybe a double handful of moments where I started to view media as something that wasn't going to work in swimming. It hasn't always been something that is like, this is going to work. I just got to get here and then it works. And every single person that I've talked to that has had success, and a couple of my luckily close friends now have had huge success in media, have always said that there is a point. It's not a linear growth. It is a flat line, and then it just takes off. Mm-hmm. Once you get to the point where people are listening and then they want to share with their friends. And I mean, it's not like a follower count. It's a point where you get to, your product is good enough that people enjoy it and want to spread the word. And so once that switch kind of flipped in my head where I was like, I just want to make really good content. I'm going to make the best content that I can with the budget and the limitations that I have right now and see where it takes me. And people just quickly started to jump on. And then there's that hockey stick point where, and like I mentioned earlier, once that budget starts to hit, and I think that's where the biggest miss is in swimming, is there's not a big budget for fun. Mm-hmm. Once that budget starts to hit, I'm investing 100% of it in fun in swimming, and there's going to be a return, and it's going to be not only for me, it's going to be for everybody, hopefully. And like you mentioned just a second ago, my number one priority is to figure out how I can be an asset to teams to make meets more fun, not only for swimmers, but for the parents that sit there for 4 hours in a bleacher to watch their kids swim for a minute and a half. If I can come out there and do something entertaining in the middle of the meet so that the beginning portion of it, you have, you know, you can look forward to it, and then the second half of it, you can talk about it, then I'm 100% in. Once the budget hits, that's the number one priority, is inject fun into the most monotonous parts of the sport.
Well, I'll tell you what, that goes right along with the mission of Fitter and Faster Swim Tour. And that's why we're so excited that you have a role within what we do at Fitter and Faster. So talk about the latest promotion that we're doing with you, swimming that 50 flying jeans, what it's all entailed and what the idea behind it is, because that seems like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a blast. And I'm doing 100 now. So the top comment on that, I said, if I got 20,000 likes on it, which I consistently lowball stuff like that, and I need to figure it out because 100 flying jeans is going to be tough. I said, if we got 20,000 likes, I'll do 100 flying jeans and try to break a minute. after that 50 fly, which I didn't warm up for, I didn't warm down. The warm down part I should have done. The warm up, I don't know if it was a good idea or a bad idea. It felt okay. Watching it back, there's definitely some things that I could change. The jeans were good. I want to cut the pockets off of them, but I don't know if that's cheating. But the second 25, I shouldn't have stayed underwater as long as I did. I should have come up and just started pulling because the legs are doing nothing. They're doing nothing. Off the blocks, things were good. But first 25, 11.9 was cooking. I was pretty shocked. I had to run that back a few times and put it into my video editor and timestamp it and figure out if that was legit. It was legit. It was 11.9, and then I think like 16.5 or something like that. Is that right? 16? No. 15.5. 11.9, 15.5. Is that right?
Yeah. That's a heavy load coming back.
It's a lot. And most of it was the turn where I started doing underwater kicks and wasn't moving forward in the last couple strokes. But that promotion is just 100% to inject fun, right? It's a fun giveaway that has value for a pair of people that we're going to send out to the biggest meet on U.S. soil in 2024, the biggest show possible, right? We're sending some people out there and we're going to create some content and storytell with those individuals as well. So we have this really cool thing that we can do. The catalyst for the growth of it is me doing a 50 fly in jeans and storytelling the fact that they thought I couldn't go under 30. I went under 30. I went 27. I smashed the barrier. And so now we're doing this giveaway and people can get into it and they can go to this incredible meet and have a really fun, vacation, the coolest vacation that you can take in swimming. And then now we can storytell us taking someone out there, me hanging out with them hanging out with Olympians and getting to do all this cool stuff. And now the ball is rolling between me and the Fitter and Faster team. Now, and this was kind of the whole thing that I wanted to try to have happen in this relationship. And I think David from Fitter and Faster wanted the same thing, is we get that catalyst, everything starts to click, and then we can start to build off of it. So now I've got 100 fly that I'm doing. Now we've got a couple of things that we're going to try to do on site in Indianapolis if I do end up out there. It's rolling. And everything we do, my main priority, and I know it is at the Fitter and Faster side as well with the relationship between us, is to try to bring more fun to the sport. There is such an opportunity to inject fun into the sport. You just have to do it in the right way, and you have to slowly convince people that it's a good thing. For some reason, there are a lot of people that think the sport should just be mundane and it should be a grind only. But you look at every other sport, and there's a lot of fun programmed into it. There's absolutely no reason why we can't program a lot into our sport as well.
Oh, absolutely. And it is the mission of Fitter and Faster. And for a long time, when the camps first started coming out, I didn't allow myself to see the whole value. And then once you host one or two of them, even if you have great kids, even if you have athletes on your team that are competing against the clinicians that come, mm-hmm. what's valuable to me when we have a camp somewhere is that the clinicians, we get to share our story in the sport, and it creates a pathway. It creates pathways for young athletes to see that they can do it too. And one thing that you just mentioned that's so critical to our mission, I think, as a company, is that it doesn't have to be this grind all the time. And even though we value hard work, we value commitment, dedication, all those things, I think it's really hard to get any place if you're not also enjoying it. And I'm so glad that you're doing it. And one of the ways that I think you're perpetuating fun is by doing these different things that, yes, are they exhibitory? They are, but we need that. So like, who wants to race Herbie Bem in a 50 free, right? Mm-hmm. Like as a member of the ASCA board, I'm so high on Herbie right now and so proud of what he did this year.
Oh yeah!
So much credit goes to him, and Bob would say the same thing. And really, except we have one of our best athletes is going to be a first year swimmer out there for him in a couple months, and we're so thrilled for her. But talk about like the idea behind that, and that got a ton of attention when you did that. And then to see how fast you guys are still going, it was awesome, man. Talk about the how you got into that and how you convinced Herbie to do it, because Herbie doesn't have much free time on his hands.
Not as much anymore. So Herbie actually initiated it.
Awesome.
So I put out a post that said I was going out to Arizona to do a Fitter and Faster camp. I did one with Giles, and we ended up doing a 25 fly out there, and it was probably the most fun those kids have had in a long time. They were super excited about it. I think Giles had fun. He cooked me. went 9-9 at 25 fly and looked like he wasn't even trying. I was 10-6 and I was working. But then in jeans, I went 1.3 slower. So if you want to do the math on what a 25 fly in jeans, it's just 1.3 seconds typically. Whatever the percentage is, it probably scales. Which I think would mean Giles would be 11-2 in a 25 fly in jeans. Not bad. So you'd probably be like 25 low in a 50. But so that idea came from me going out there and this whole breaking 22 in a 50 free. I never did it. I never really had too many opportunities to swim a 50 free. Back in the day, I think I probably could have been 21 low. Very different world now, but I've also never done it. And I can say I think I would have been as much as I want, but I, before my career is over, will go sub 22. It is something that is going to happen. I'm only 29, so I have some time. But so I posted and said, I'll do a 50 freestyle for time while I'm out there. If this hits 5,000 likes, Herbie commented and said 10,000 and we'll race. And then I said, you fool, I'm going to turn this into the biggest thing possible. And so started throwing it out there, the catalyst, or it started to roll from there. And then
Herbie's getting in the gym, pumping weights. He's tapering for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think he thought it was just going to be a fun thing. And I was like, nah, not going to let that happen. I'm going to turn this into an event. This is going to be a pay-per-view now. So I was like, why don't I bring a little bit of like UFC into this? So I started firing off like sprint videos and I went like a terrible 10-9, looked awful. Head position was terrible. Had a bunch of people DMing me. Jordan Crooks has been DMing me. I've been working with like Josh Pernot and like a bunch of big names in the sport. People sending me feedback, trying to help me get faster, help me go under 22, which is hilarious because it's like hardly a respectable time at the top of the sport. It's breaking 22, right? But now everyone is like invested. And so it just kept snowballing and I kept sending, you know, videos out and I started to get a little bit better. And then Herbie sent one back where he looked pretty fast. This was leading up to it. Started putting out graphics and then the team at Face First and Arena combined to do those caps. So I got to do my own cap drop that said Kyle versus Herbie in the gold foil. And then it was just kind of a snowball event. And then I rolled right into calling out Bobby Gintaro from UNCW. And so we'll see who wins that one. But I think that one might be even bigger. It's going to take some time to set up just with trials. I probably could have waited a little bit longer to call him out, but I wanted to kind of roll on top of that and just let it keep going. So that one's going to be super fun. I think we're going to turn it into a legit event as opposed to just like, granted, the team was fired up. The team's big and there was the entire side of the pool is lined up. I forgot to tie my suit, which is not good. So I hit the water and it parachuted and Herbie was gone. I mean, I wouldn't have beaten him anyway. It probably would have been like 22-1. But yeah, I mean, it was just a fun thing that started with me just being like, hey, you know what? I'm going to be out there. If you guys want me to do this, then like this post and I'll go 50 free for time. And I would have done it at the camp. But instead we rolled all the way into this big event that we got to put on for the team. And I really think it was like the most fun I've seen a team have at a practice in a long time, which was the win for me.
So oh, I got that.
It's also team up with Arena and Face First and do national championship gold foil. So this is Leon Marchand. He wasn't out there. He's in Austin now. So I brought it back and I'm going to go give it to him when he's back from the Olympic Training Center. But I got to do those caps and, you know, just be an asset for fun and be an asset as an alumni on the pool deck. And so that was kind of my first time to get to give back to a team in the form of some crazy caps that I don't think anyone's ever done before. First iteration of that and kind of a combination of my resources in the sport being, you know, affiliated with Arena in, you know, a very casual way right now, hopefully a more serious way if they're listening to this in the future, and Face First as well, wanting to team up and just kind of create this cool event for a team that just won a national championship and a team that got cut in 2008 coming back and winning a national championship. So they deserve something cool. Got to give them something cool. And it all started with just the video where I was like, if you guys want to see me swim a 50 freestyle at a fitter and faster camp, let me know. And then Herbie was like, we're doing it at ASU and we're going to turn this into a big event. And I was like, wasn't expecting that, but I'm appreciative.
Oh, it's awesome, man. And there you go. Like engaging, you know, different teams and coaches and fan bases. And, you know, you talk about the program being cut. I mean, when that first happened, how can you cut a program like that had so much history? So it's so great. Like, that's the first thing I thought of when they won the national championship was, man, this is exactly the kind of comeback story that you can get behind, you know?
Yeah.
The other thing that I've been really thinking about since you did that was, you know, is there a future in swimming for somebody like Kyle to be a promoter and like go some 1v1 50 frees around the country, you know, like a UFC swim type event? You mentioned it. I was thinking about it when you did that. Is there a marketplace in our sport for some of those every once in a while?
Yeah. And so that was part of the goal with that. You know, Brett Hawk did the backyard throwdowns. I think those were great and it was a good, and UVA did the super finals. I think those are like some of the instances where we've seen like the head to head stuff. Obviously we've had swim offs for forever. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to say that any of us are like reinventing the wheel here with racing other people, but it is different. And it is an evolution of, I think, the promotional side of things. You
Correct.
know, we took racing and boiled it down to a 1v1 model that is very focused on this person versus this person so that you can then build that story. And then UVA did it in the middle of the meet. And they're like, all right, we're going to score points on this. When they tested the waters there. And I think really just the experimentation to try to figure out what the swimming community's appetite is for promotion and where to direct it is the important thing. I think we got to try more stuff. We got to be open to trying something and have people be like, you know what? I didn't really love that. You know, if you look at the NBA, they did the in-season tournament. Everyone thought it was the stupidest idea ever. And then as it started getting going in the first season, people started to get addicted to it.
Yep.
And it's like this idea that, oh, we shouldn't take a risk. We shouldn't try this side of things. We should do this instead of that. I think this is a thing that has legs. And next NCAA season, buckle up. Oh, that's all I'll say. There are some things that are in the works that are going to be huge. Trials, I think. I don't want to jump the gun. I'm still currently going to be here during trials, recording content, creating content. There's a chance that I'll be out there. So keep an eye on the Instagram. We'll see if there's an announcement. If not, I'm still going to create awesome content here and around Austin, figure out how to be an asset to this sport. The NCAA season is going to be exciting. It's going to be fun. We're going to do some things potentially even during an actual NCAA meet as opposed to just off the blocks on stopwatches in practice, in multiple locations. So I'll leave it at that.
Well, that's exciting. I look forward to seeing what that is. And, you know, the other thing that I've been thinking about is, even as a proud American, I think the Canadian creation suit that you have is my favorite one.
That one was good. That one was good. I had the idea for the barcode, the UR or the QR code was the most fun part of that. The Wayne Gretzky thing and the president bit was a fun one that I came up with. But when I decided to, because when I'm recording a green screen piece of content, I'm not like savvy on social, really. I just create good content and then I don't really know how any of it works. So the green screen, I sit right here. And I was like, I'm going to be blocking one of the legs. So the payoff can be that I'm showing you this QR code and then I scoot over and it's just another one just to emphasize the maple syrup bit and then cut it off quickly at the end. So yeah, that was a fun one. That one performed pretty well. I had to record that in my hotel room just on my iPhone because I was getting an award from the CSCAA.
Yeah, that was great, by the way, man.
We're dialing all that stuff up. We got it right here.
I just talked to Sam Barini before you and I jumped on.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. So congratulations. Yeah,
connected out there.
Yeah. Tell everybody why you think that's important that, you know, here's a coaching association. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you did a lot for the NCAA this year. But talk about why that award was important and what that award was.
Yeah. So it's I'll read it to you. I don't want to get it wrong. So it's presented to a pioneering individual and organization whose efforts and innovations best promote the integrity and enhancement of the student athlete ideal. And I think the main thing there is the student athlete ideal and enhancing student athlete's ability to be, you know, to be excited, just to be to get like their moment, I think is really the main thing that drives me to want to create content and create an audience in this swimming space. Is athletes in swimming don't really get moments, you know, and by moment, I'll define that with a crowd, with excitement, with energy, with ideas that are being put into the effort that is being put in all year. We don't get very many of those moments, you know. One of the things that I love, even as a non-alumni or a non-media entity, is the fact that Herbie and Bob decided, you know what, no, we're going to suit up all year. We're going to swim fast all year. We're a program that has the ability to do that. We should be doing it so that other programs can potentially do it in the future as well. We should be exciting more than once a year because that is exponentially more valuable to a streaming partner. So a lot of that stuff went into winning an award, and the content that I created for being innovative and enhancing the student athlete ideal. But I think the reason that it's important, I think I said this in my speech, I kind of blacked out on stage, was that it kind of proves that, and I was actually talking to somebody from USA Swimming, and the thing that they're excited about is trying to help me show people how far you can go in our sport creating content. You know, there's this thing that we do in like the content creation side of things. And, you know, a lot of people don't want to talk about the money side of things. They don't want to talk about the success because they think it's showboating. A lot of the people that I've talked to, I've said, and I don't know if it's actually going to be possible, but my idea is when I sign a big contract, which hopefully it's going to happen soon. When I sign a really big contract, I want it to be public. I want that dollar figure to be public, so that people can look at it and say, he did it, it's possible. And then kids that are 14, 15 years old, I always say those are my favorite DMs to get from these young kids that are in high school that send me their first YouTube video that is potentially really not very good, but it is also them saying, I'm interested in this, mm-hmm. and you've made me think it's possible. I still don't know if it's possible. I think it is, but once that contract hits, I want to prove to people that it can happen. And, you know, I think I'm going to steal a quote from my friend over at USA Swimming and prove to people how far content creation can go and how fun it can be, but also that it can turn into a legit career. So that's kind of what this award was. It was a step in that direction to try to prove to people that people are listening, people are paying attention, people see what's happening. And it is something that could be viable, even if it's a side gig. You know, it doesn't have to be everyone's main job. It can be a hobby. It can be something that you try to do on the side to see if it's viable. But it's also possible that it could turn into a career that hopefully, and my main driver to try to make money is because I would love to be in a Ferrari. I would love to be in a big house so that people can look at that and say, you know, because you look at a doctor, right? You look at a CEO of a company, there has to be, and this is kind of my opinion on just, I guess, like markets as well. There has to be something driving you to wanting to do that, because being the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, believe it or not, is not a fun gig.
Nope.
There's not a lot of fun going on there. Being a doctor, you have to be a special type of person to be driven to, one, wanting to create change, and also, two, have a life that allows you to just be set up to only focus on that.
Yep.
So there has to be these things that allow people to look at this journey, which mine has been rough, and want to go through it to get to the other side of it. So do I like Ferraris? I think they're cool. I would never wish to really own one. If I got a Ferrari, know that I got it because I'm trying to show off to people so that they look at this and they go, that's pretty cool. He has a Ferrari from creating content and swimming. Maybe I can get a Camry, because then there's no way anyone's going to be as good as me at this, right? But, you know, the dream is to eventually prove that, you know, I bought a house, I bought a car, I can, you know, fly to Australia and race Cam McAvoy as a result of the work that I do in swimming and swimming alone. So creating that value in the sport from that sense, and not being afraid to show people, hey, I bought a $500 microphone with some of the money that I made creating content in this space. This actually was bought with other money, not money that, because I needed this initially, but
there's bad some example, startup costs.
Bad example. But in the future and in the near future, I think there are going to be, you know, points where I'll be able to, you know, eventually buy a dream car of mine or something like that, and get to story tell that side of things. And, you know, I think it's just a part of swimming that we've kind of hid from a little bit. But if you look at basketball, you know, a lot of the dream that these kids have is, you know, looking at these star players that get to drive a Mercedes G-Wagon as a kid. That is cool. And we can allow it to be cool and just let it be cool, because eventually you might grow up and go, I don't need a G-Wagon. Like, that's not my thing. But when you're a kid, cars are pretty cool. Boats and planes are super, super cool. And it's an overlooked component of interest and engagement in the youth population of a sport, is seeing that end goal and seeing how fun life could be if you continued along with this journey, right? So hopefully it's more than just a Katie Ledecky and Caleb Dressel. I think we're moving in that direction to where we have a population of athletes that are doing well and well enough to have some fun with the funds that are created as a result of their hard work. But long-winded way to say, I think really this award and, you know, the risk that they took giving it to someone like me says, hey, we're paying attention, get involved, stay involved. And I kind of mirrored that in my speech.
Yeah, man. I mean, and congratulations. You're so deserving of it. You brought so much great attention to our sport over the past few months and the last couple of years. And the people that are in the know are appreciative of that, and they see the value that you're bringing. And speaking of that, when we talk about bringing value to the sport, how did you like being a commentator for the swim meet?
It's fun. It's a lot of fun. I wish I could do it 25 weekends a year. Those jobs are really difficult to get. And the job that I got doing commentary for ESPN in the Big 12, I got it on just an off chance that a friend of mine recommended me. They called me and just asked me if I wanted it. I have little to no broadcasting experience. I've done some for Flow Swimming, and it was just me on a headset with no production. I said, yes, yeah, sure, I can do it. I went out there the first day. I knew I was way in over my head, because the team out there that produces Big 12s, they're incredible. They are the top of the line. And I believe that we don't even deserve to have them out there. These are, you know, a team that has worked on March Madness, MLB baseball, you know, big productions, and they treat it the exact same way. And they have expectations of me that I didn't even know I could provide. And I don't even know if I did, honestly. And so it's been a learning experience. It's the most fun I ever have in the sport. I don't think I'll say no to, well, now I have to say no to commentary gigs because there's so much happening next NCAA season. I'm talking to as many people as I possibly can about getting on a headset like this, but without this microphone, with one that comes out right here, like a broadcaster, because that's as fun as it gets. It gets me to the point where I can be an asset to athletes, similar to, you know, a Kelly Pash. I can set her up for a moment like that, and then I can take that content and then turn it into an asset for her, where she can grow her brand. Kelly's got her own brand too. So, I mean, she definitely provided value to me as well by doing that.
Yeah.
But allowing kids like Will Modlin to talk about doing, you know, Wii Sports, and having his dad, you know, give me that intel, and having Jordan Tiffany, you know, get to, you know, say, I love you, Kyle, and stuff like that on air, and me turn that into a piece of content. You know, that's the main draw for me, is getting to be an asset to athletes in a space where typically you look at a swimming interview and it's, how did you do? How did you feel? And it's like heavy breathing. And we talk about the third 25. Forget about that. Especially with a guy like Will Modlin, who was on his fourth interview. Let's talk about Mario, because I want to put that out there and help you grow your brand. With a Kelly, it was my third time talking to her. It was her last Big 12 swim. I got to commentate her entire Big 12 career. So it was almost a little bit of an emotional moment for me, getting to watch my, like, literally, I think Kelly was my first swimmer that I got to watch from beginning to end in college. She was a fifth year, got to watch the entire thing. And so it was like, I'm never going to commentate a Kelly Pash race again. And then she gave me her cap, and it was like this great tie a bow on it moment. And so it's just moments like that are what motivate me to want to get on a headset and do what is, contrary to whatever anyone else's opinion is, a very difficult job, an overwhelming job, an exhausting job, and one where there is a different piece of your brain that turns on from an anxiety and stress perspective, knowing that you are live. When you're recorded, guess what? End the video, start it over, we'll do it again. When you're live, you mess up, it's over. Your career could be done, right? I don't think I'm the type of person where that could be something that I'm worried about or should be. But there is a component of like, oh, I hope I don't say something stupid, you know? And also, the thing that I've noticed now with this new push that I have to try to build athletes' brands is I want to make sure that this moment that this athlete is getting is maximized. And I don't want it to be my fault that it isn't. So there's a lot of stress involved, but that is without question, not even close comparatively to anything else, the most fun that I have in this sport and the most fulfilled that I feel is getting to be on a headset and getting to talk to these athletes that I now know, which is like a blessing and a curse, commentating a lot of these races, because I watch people that I know lose a lot. I watch people that I know, like personally, that I can call friends lose. And I watch, you know, people that I know, like a Kelly, I watch her win. So it's exciting. And then I feel the pressure of, all right, I need to deliver this moment to her. And then I need to be able to riff off of her and turn this into a piece of content so that it can build her brand. And I don't want to mess up that moment. So there's a lot of pressure that goes into it. There's, you know, so much going on in my head, and you got to think crazy quickly. You got to be 25 yards down the pool, but you also have to be on the blocks at the same time in your head while you're also reading a bunch of data and trying not to nerd out too much because you don't want to steer people away. It's fun, but it's exhausting.
Yeah. And there's so much information coming out. You got somebody in your ear, you're watching the race, then you got the prompter that you're thinking about.
Multiple people in my ear. So that's the part I didn't know about. So I had my voice, my co-commentator's voice, my production crew's voice, and then also someone counting down features. So I think I had 5 people in my headset while I'm trying to communicate a message. So when you hear someone talking like this, their headset is, I mean, I wish I could play like 5 different things at one time so you could hear what my headset is like for 4 straight hours or 3 or 2 or whatever. We'll keep it at 4 to make it dramatic. It's intense. Taking off that headset is a good feeling, but typically I go home with a pretty steep headache.
I'm sure. Well, you did it beautifully and with grace and class and everything else. And it was so impressive. Kyle, where do you see our sport 10 years down the road?
A very different place. A very, very different place. A lot of people are starting, and I don't want to like say that I'm a crystal ball guy. I've been sounding this alarm for a long, long, long time and trying to get people to experiment, especially on the college swimming side of things. But we don't have a pro league in our sport. Our pro system that we have right now actually relies pretty heavily on the NCAA. The NCAA is, I think, the most exciting league in swimming possible. It has so much attention. It's really high octane. It's high. It's fast. It's 25 yards. Some people hate that. I think it's okay. It kind of detaches us from the world, the need for a world record, which I think is a huge detriment to our sport, is the fact that we need a world record to be exciting. We need to get as far away from that as possible. I actually, when I was swimming, didn't agree with that. But then I grew up and looked at the sport and was like, oh, shoot, like we're not in a good spot. We're not in a good spot. And anybody that knows anything about swimming will agree with that statement. So in 10 years, I think the sport looks a lot different. If we get ahead of it and we start to really create interest and we start to create a valuable product and we get aggressive, I mean, really aggressive with trying to create a valuable product, we could be in a really cool spot. If we don't, we could be in a much different, much less fun spot, because I've made a couple pieces of content about this, but what people need to realize is we don't deserve any of the coverage we get outside of the stuff that we create ourselves. NBC, ESPN, they're doing us a favor by doing a lot of this stuff. ESPN, the coverage that they present for a Big 12, they're not making money on that. The coverage that they present for SECs, ACCs, all these big conferences where you turn it on, you're like, yes, this is the kind of production that we need and we deserve. Need, maybe. Deserve, absolutely not. They are lighting money on fire, including having me on commentary, lighting money on fire for those events.
Right.
If we want better streaming, we got to create a better product. And we also just got to start watching. Even if it's not great production, those numbers matter. It gives people firepower to then get to go say, hey, we've got some momentum here. What if we tried this? Can we implement this? It's kind of like you watch Shark Tank, right? Hey, Sharks, we don't have a lot of money yet, but in 2022, we did $100 in revenue. In 2023, we did $200 in revenue. In 2024, we've already done $900. right? 100, 200, 900. That's not a lot of money. It's not transformative money, but it makes you think, what's going on there? How did you just scale up 500%? Not right. quite 500. It's like 450, but whatever. 450%. So that side of things, I think we really need to get aggressive about, because football makes a lot of money. They can dump some money into swimming. Basketball makes a lot of money. They can dump some money into swimming. But if you tell football and basketball they don't have to do it anymore, good luck having that conversation and trying to convince them to do it. Because if I was in their shoes, I wouldn't want to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would want to read my speeds.
That's right. And I think, too, that far too often our clubs and our coaches have relied too much on what the NGB is doing or what some sponsor is allowing them to do. Like, coaches and teams can become entrepreneurial if they want.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really important aspect of what's happening in the sport.
Yeah. And I think the cap side of things is kind of a gateway drug to doing more of it.
Yeah.
You know, there's, believe it or not, a lot of the things that I do have some underlying reasons that a lot of people might not see. It's packaged in a really fun and cap drop and, you know, that type of way. But really the main goal is to, like you just said, help teams look at themselves as a business, because we are a huge liability right now. We're not an asset. We're just a liability. Nothing we do is asset based. I mean, maybe we have some learn to swim programs that are good and like the community likes it and the city likes it, but that's not going to keep programs around for the next 100 years, because eventually pools are expensive. They have to be paid for, and donors aren't going to want to just continue firing money into programs. And eventually donors pass away. Unfortunately, it's a thing that happens as a human. So if we lose a big donor and our pool isn't paid for and we can't raise the money, we start losing pools. We find ourselves in a very, very bad situation. So
that's right.
I think experimenting and figuring out how to make pools valuable and figuring out how to turn meets into events is the absolute biggest thing that we should be focusing on. Because swim meets, I hate that phrase. I absolutely hate swim meet. I wish it was an event. I wish it was a game. I wish it was something different than a swim meet, because swim meet has such negative connotation attached to it. It is a boring thing where I'll go to concessions and get some Skittles and go sit down and wait 3 hours for my next race and play cards because I'm bored. Why don't we try to actually make this thing interesting, especially at the NCAA level, and especially then up to potentially a professional level at some point? We have a professional league. All of a sudden, everything starts to change.
I agree. I'll tell you, man, like you look at all the stuff with concussions in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Youth football was taking a hit for a little bit. Yeah. Now flag football is the fastest growing sport in the United States.
Yep.
And it's completely changed in what, 3 or 4 years, right? So there's something to be had there in our sport. We just need to figure out what it is.
100%. I've no notes, nothing to add to that phrase, because it's dead on.
Perfect, Kyle. It's a great point to end the conversation today. Thank you so much for joining us on Coach's Corner. How can people engage and get in contact with you?
At this point, I think you can just Google my name. It's a cool thing.
All right, man. Hey,
Google it and then pick your favorite platform. Hopefully the Google results continue to get cooler and better. But yeah, if you're an Instagram person, Google me, you'll find me on there. Just type in my full name and it should come up. If not, then I got some work to do.
I think that's our marketing clip to start. The first clip we'll have out on Instagram will be like, Kyle, how do people get in touch with you? Google, baby.
Yeah, I think that's probably the coolest phrase I've ever said on a podcast. So I'm going to ride that one out.
Thanks, man.